Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, December 1st, 2014. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Bonner County wants Congress to renew federal PILT money for counties. Police use kettling at Ferguson protest in Portland, and WSU researchers developing breathalyzer for marijuana. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Bonner County commissioners have joined the National Association of Counties in endorsing congressional action on the Payment in Lieu of Taxes programs for counties for fiscal year 2015. The Payment in Lieu of Taxes program, also known as PILT, is designed to help counties with a lot of federal land that is exempt from the local tax rolls. For fiscal year 2014, 1,900 local governments received about $437 million from the Payment in Lieu of Taxes program, and Bonner County, with 43% federal land, received $630,000. The county also received $415,000 during the current fiscal year from a similar federal program called Secure Rural Schools, or SRS. However, Congress has been renewing the program on a year-to-year basis and has not yet taken action for fiscal year 2015. The Bonner County Daily Bee quoted a statement from Commissioners Kerry Kelly, Mike Nielsen, and Glenn Bailey saying, "Without swift congressional action, our county and communities across the country could face devastating budget shortfalls or tax increases to support mandated county services. Without PILT and SRS funding, counties and local property owners would be burdened with funding vital public services related to federal public lands beyond the means of the local property tax base." U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack announced last week the U.S. Department of Agriculture will give the University of Idaho $768,000 in grant money for promoting biodiesel and conducting a pilot program using cow manure. Under the three-year program, the University of Idaho, along with partners and biofuel companies, will use 187 million gallons of cow manure to create electricity. Vilsack said in a phone interview with the Daily News, "The energy is renewable." He said it reduces the country's reliance on foreign oil and provides a renewable resource from livestock waste. "This is about expanding the rural economy, using a number of different strategies to create jobs and to create stable markets for producers." It's important to know that this is part of an overall strategy to rebuild rural economies. We continue to focus on agriculture and the important role our farmers and ranchers play in producing a product that not only meets our needs, but also can be exported around the world. The grant is part of a series of USDA grants in 47 states that have already produced 5.8 billion gallons of renewable fuel and 50 billion kilowatt hours of electricity. Vilsack said the electricity is enough to power 5.3 million homes for 365 days. The Idaho Suicide Prevention Hotline, which was launched in 2012, is now answering calls 24 hours per day. During the last 2 years, calls to the number after hours were routed to volunteers and mental health workers in other states. The Twin Falls Times News reports the Idaho Hotline now receives between 10 and 20 calls per day. Hotline Executive Director John Reusser said the hotline has received a boost in volunteers and funding. The hotline operated 4 days a week when it started in 2012 with 18 volunteers. Reusser told the Times News the hotline now has 60 volunteers trained to answer calls. Idaho's suicide rate is generally higher than the national average. In 2012, it was 44% higher than the national average. The suicide prevention hotline number is 1-800-273-8255. 800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255. Protesters against police in Ferguson, Missouri, taking the life of unarmed teenager Michael Brown and the lack of grand jury indictment resulted in the tactic of kettling at the Portland Jail and Portland Police Bureau's administrative headquarters Saturday night. Police and riot gear surrounded the more than 100 people who staged a die-in in the street and announced through a public address van, "Everyone in the street is under arrest." The Portland Mercury newspaper reported the police in riot gear pushed the protesters from four directions and then announced everyone on the four corners, meaning the sidewalks, were also under arrest. The Mercury reporter said he managed to get word out to Mayor Charlie Hale's office that he was prevented from leaving the intersection and subject to arrest, even though TV station crews were allowed to leave. Mercury reporter Dennis Theralt said after that the situation changed and police said they would let protesters leave one by one if they were docile and dispersed after they left. Until now, police in North America have mostly used the kettling tactic in situations where there was property damage. Ongoing Darren Wilson protests in Portland have involved blocking streets and on Monday night last week blocking two interstates for brief periods, but no property damage. Earlier in the evening Saturday, police used flashbang grenades on a crowd following a retreating line of riot police at a nearby downtown location. Nuclear watchdogs are opposing some of the plans in the final cleanup decision for the closed Reactor F at Hanford, which was one of the nine Hanford reactors used to produce plutonium for the first nuclear bombs. The Hanford Advisory Board wanted the Department of Energy to clean up radiation more than 15 feet below ground, but the DOE's final decision allows radiation more than 15 feet below the ground to dissipate in 15 places near the F reactor. The Department of Energy said in its final cleanup decision, using the pump and treat method did not help reduce the amount of radioactive strontium in the soil at the N reactor, where strontium levels were much higher. The document says strontium will still be in the soil at the F reactor for 150 years, even if the pump and treat method is used to rid the soil of non-radioactive toxins such as nitrates and hexavalent chromium. The DOE says those two toxins will dissipate before 150 years. The Department of Energy also said there's no need to pump binder chemicals into the ground at the F reactor like was done at the N reactor because the contaminants there are not migrating. Columbia Riverkeeper Conservation Director Dan Saris said the department is, quote, choosing to ignore overwhelming common sense input from citizens throughout the Pacific Northwest who want to see a proactive approach to reducing pollution that reaches the Columbia River from the Hanford site and the F reactor area. The advisory committee has been carefully monitoring final cleanup planning for the F reactor because it will set the stage for cleanup plans at the other eight decommissioned Hanford reactors. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Lewiston police say they have identified the driver in a hit-and-run accident that left a pedestrian in critical condition Thanksgiving Day. 39-year-old McCara Lane was walking in a crosswalk across Main Street at 4:40 p.m. Thursday when she was apparently hit by a 2002 white Chevrolet Blazer. Witnesses told police the driver of the Blazer got out and looked at the victim lying on the pavement and then drove away. Police say the car was located at 622 Burrell Avenue in Lewiston. A police SWAT team surrounded a Coeur d'Alene house where a fugitive was reported Saturday night and say they found 37-year-old fugitive John David Crispin dead in the home yesterday morning. Police say Crispin was wanted on four warrants for violent crimes, including assault. battery, felony eluding, and drug infractions in Benoit County, assault with a dangerous weapon in Salt Lake City, aggravated assault and eluding by the U.S. Marshals Service, and felon in possession of a firearm by the U.S. Probation and Pretrial Services. Coeur d'Alene Police spokesperson Christy Wood told the Spokesman Review Crispin's ex-wife went to police Saturday night and said Crispin was armed inside the Quincy Court home and had made statements that he would not cooperate with police. Wood said at least one shot was fired from the home at about 3:30 a.m. yesterday, and police returned fire. She did not say how Crispin died. Washington State University chemistry professor Herbert Hill and doctoral student Jessica Tufariello say they are developing a portable field breathalyzer capable of detecting marijuana. Hill told the Tacoma News Tribune he is repurposing existing technology used by the Transportation Security Agency to find drugs and explosives at airports to detect THC on people's breath. Since Washington legalized recreational cannabis in December 2012, 25% of the blood samples taken from drivers by police have tested positive for THC, up from 18.6% the year before. Initiative 502, which legalized recreational marijuana, also makes it easier for police to demand drivers give blood samples. It also sets a legal limit of 5 nanograms of THC per milliliter of blood for drivers, a number medical marijuana advocates argue is too low. The roadside breathalyzer will not be able to measure the amount of THC, just tell police whether THC is present. Alcohol breathalyzers are also used to justify blood draws to legally establish blood alcohol levels, but they give officers an approximate blood alcohol number. Hill says the team at WSU will begin human breath tests early next year after the breathalyzer prototype is finished. Montana legislators have drafted laws for the next legislative session, increasing the maximum speed limits on interstate highways within the state from 75 to 80 miles per hour. One of the people drafting the bills is Republican Representative-elect Art Wittich of Bozeman, who told the Associated Press, "I just think our roads are engineered well and technology is such we can drive those roads safely." Idaho and Utah have already raised speed limits above 75 miles per hour on certain stretches of rural interstate. Idaho State Police have written 300 more tickets between July and November this year on Interstate 84 than in the same period last year. The new 80-mile-per-hour speed limit went into effect on portions of Interstates 84, 86, and 15 in Idaho in July. The new law did not affect speed limits on Interstate 90 in the Idaho Panhandle. ISP spokesperson Teresa Baker said police are more likely to give speeding tickets to those going a couple miles per hour over the 80-mile-per-hour speed limit than to someone who was going a couple miles per hour over the 75-mile-per-hour limit. Trains began running again on the busy main rail line in the Idaho Panhandle after a rock slide 14 miles east of Bonner's Ferry was cleared shortly after noon Saturday. Burlington Northern Santa Fe brought in heavy equipment to clear the slide, which buried the tracks Friday at 12:30 p.m. Amtrak passenger service on the route from Chicago to the Northwest was suspended for 2 days, resuming yesterday. The Moscow City Council tonight will consider whether to negotiate with the Moscow Urban Renewal Agency to acquire 2,381 square feet of land at the corner of West 6th and South Jackson Streets to construct a realigned intersection. The city is considering changing the layout of the intersection so opposing 6th Street traffic is not facing each other at Jackson Street. The current alignment forces non-turning eastbound vehicles and bicycles to shift right a full lane when crossing Jackson, a non-standard situation that has led to a high number of accidents at the intersection. Last week, the City Council Public Works Finance Committee forwarded a third layout plan to the full City Council. The proposed new alignment for 6th and Jackson, presented by City Public Works Director Les McDonald, represents a combination of two other alignment choices, which required the acquisition of either a smaller or larger segment of the Urban Renewal District property at the corner of 6th and Jackson. The City Council will also consider changes to the city's vending ordinance tonight to limit street vendor hours to late night and early morning hours when most downtown restaurants are closed, and to allow sidewalk vendors more space to operate. Another agenda item tonight will be approval of an ordinance allowing the city to license pedicabs. The City Council will also be asked to allow the Moscow Volunteer Fire Department to apply for up to $70,000 in assistance to firefighters grants for 5 or 6 thermal imaging cameras that can have their batteries recharged in fire department vehicles. Thermal imaging cameras are used to look for fire in hidden places and to check for heat in a fire environment while searching for people. The 2 thermal imaging cameras the department now has are 13 years old, use outdated technology, and lack mobile charging capability. For safety reasons, the Moscow Fire Department would like to purchase cameras with wireless technology that allows a command unit to see what firefighters are seeing on the screen. The assistance to firefighters grant require a 10% match from the city. The council will also hold a public hearing on adopting the 2012 International Residential Code, 2012 International Mechanical Code, the 2012 International Fuel Gas Code, the 2012 International Energy Conservation Code, the 2014 National Electrical Code, and the 2009 Uniform Plumbing Code. The City Council will also hear a Citizen Commission report on the Fair and Affordable Housing Commission, presented by Becky Couch, and the Hamilton Low Aquatic Center annual report, presented by Recreation Supervisor Eric Newell. One consent agenda item is approval of presentation of a request for proposal to Latah Sanitation Incorporated for a single-stream curbside recycling program in the city. Another consent agenda item is a $43,000 design contract for Rediesel Engineering of Lewiston for new school bus routing, bus loading, parent drop-off, and pedestrian and bicycle facilities at Moscow Middle School on D Street. Other consent agenda items include $4,000 for Phase 3 of the Fort Russell Reconnaissance Survey that may lead to increasing the size of the Fort Russell Historic District, the fiscal year 2015 Traffic Enforcement Mobilization Agreement between the City and the Federal Office of Highway Safety, a Parkview Estates Addition Subdivision Development Agreement Amendment, and a Ridgeview Estates Second Addition Subdivision Development Agreement. Tonight's Moscow City Council meeting begins at 7 p.m. at City Hall. Well, that's it for the KRFP evening report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, there's a 20% chance of snow showers before 10 p.m. Cloudy, gradually becoming partly cloudy, low 20. Mostly sunny tomorrow, high 31. Mostly clear Tuesday night, low 21. Partly sunny Wednesday, high 36. And a 40% chance of precipitation Wednesday night. Slight chance of snow before 10 p.m. and a chance of rain or freezing rain after 10 p.m. Mostly cloudy, otherwise low 29. And a 70% chance of rain Thursday, cloudy, high 40. Currently at the Pullman Moscow Regional Airport, overcast and 20 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, Eat the Airwaves, news and opinions from the West Side, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio at about 6:35. And coming up at 7:30 live in the studios, Climate Justice Forum. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. I'm Lee Robartas. Have a good evening. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, go to the KRFP website, Radio Free Moscow, to find out more ways to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow. Or you can send memberships, $35 a year for general memberships, or $20 for low-income or students, to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.